Sangye chudang so ki chonam ma Changju bar du dag mi kyab su chi Dagi jin so gi bi sonam gi Rula pen su sangye du par shu I go for refuge until I am enlightened, to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints, for the virtuous merits that I collect, by the practice of giving and the other professions, and I attain the state of the Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened, to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints, for the virtuous merits that I collect, by the practice of giving and the other perfections. May I attain the state of the Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be separated from the bliss which is sorrowless. May all dwell in equanimity, free from aversion and clinging. The ground is covered with flowers and sprinkled with scented water. In the middle is Mount Meru, surrounded by the four continents and ornamented by the sun and the moon. By realizing all this and offering it as a Buddha realm, may all sentient beings partake of the Buddha's goodness. Om Guru Buddha Bodhisattva Sapariwara Ratnamanda Buddha Mega Samudra Saparana Samaye. Okay, welcome. Continuing on with our three visions text. So which vision are we in nowadays?
The pure vision.
Are we in the pure vision already? Whoa, you're advanced.
Vision of experience.
Yeah, the vision of experience. Okay, great. And we're doing a three-step analytical meditation. Does anybody remember what the three steps are? What's the first step? Loving kindness. What's the second step?
Compassion.
And what's the third step? Bodhicitta. Sorry?
Bodhicitta.
Okay, but in English.
Oh, I wish to...
Compassion.
Enlightened thought. Okay. Enlightenment thought. The thought of enlightenment for all beings, right? Isn't review fun? Okay. So we're in the... the enlightenment thought has a bunch of subdivision. I keep forgetting to bring up the whiteboard, so I won't diagram it. But we're on page 138, I think, on the entering enlightenment thought, training on the path for the sake of the result. So the entering enlightenment thought... I'll start off here reading. The entering enlightenment thought is the training on the path for the sake of the result. To gain perfect enlightenment, one enters the path for the sake of others. The difference between the wishing and the entering enlightenment thoughts is that they are in a sequential order, as stated by Shantideva. Just as a distinction is perceived between one who wishes to travel and one who actually travels, so the wise should recognize a graded distinction between these two, the wishing and entering enlightenment thoughts. This is my opinion, but the word wishing to me is a little bit weak, or might be interpreted as wishful thinking, but this is actually stronger than that. This is more of an aspiration that I really want to do this. You know, we've gone through the whole sections on renunciation and samsara and all that, and it's okay, I got it, I want to do this. So I like aspiration, or if somebody has a better word, but you will generally see it as wishing, okay? And the example they give here is that somebody wishes to travel, to make a trip. Oh, I'd really like to go to such and such a place. And you have this thought and you're thinking about it. And
And then you go, yeah, yeah, I'm going to do that. Then you shift into the actual planning and doing. I'm going to get a map, or I'm going to look it up, or I've got a GPS, and I'm going to calculate how much time, and I'm going to make my schedule free so I can do this trip, and then I'm going to get in my car and drive or fly or whatever. That's the example that's used between wishing and entering enlightenment thought. So there is this sort of sequential step that we need to wish it or want it, and then we need to actually do it. So therefore, motivated by great compassion, which cannot bear the suffering of others, one produces the thought to gain perfect enlightenment for the sake of others. So one needs to diligently strive in the methods to gain that enlightenment without sitting idle and without being overcome by the least bit of laziness. Remember we talked about different kinds of laziness? There's lots of different ways of talking about laziness, but we listed three kinds. Remember that? What are the three kinds of laziness?
Busyness.
Okay, busyness, yeah, that's the second one. I'm too busy.
Not and what's being the self-assured, no confidence.
Busy. Yeah, that's the third one. And what's the first one?
Just simple procrastination.
I don't feel like it. I just don't feel like it. I don't feel like it. The usual definition of laziness, yeah. So Maitreya said, to carry the heavy load of sentient beings on one's head in a leisurely manner, O excellent beings, is not beautiful. While others and I are bound by a variety of bonds, it is very reasonable to work with 100-fold diligence. We're going to talk about diligence later when we get into the perfection. And if it is asked, well then, what is the method of accomplishing the unsurpassable enlightenment like? The answer is that the method to accomplish unsurpassable enlightenment is to disregard one's own welfare and to perform the welfare of others. But to me, that's a pretty striking statement. Before I got involved in Buddhism, if somebody said, well, how do you get enlightened? I probably would have said, well, you meditate and you do ceremonies and I don't know. But it wouldn't have been this. This is a fairly radical statement, isn't it? That the way to attain enlightenment is to disregard one's own welfare and to perform the welfare of others. Does that mean you become a doormat and you let everybody walk all over you?
No.
No,
certainly not.
No. So let's be clear about that. Okay. So Shantideva says, whatever happiness there is in this world arises from the desire of happiness for others, and whatever suffering there is in this world arises from the desire of happiness for oneself. Mm-hmm. What need is there to say more? Just as the difference between these children, i.e. worldlings, work for their own benefit, while the capable ones, i.e. Buddhas, work for the benefit of others. This is a very famous quote in Buddhist circles of Shantideva describing the different approaches that regular beings have and Buddhas have. It's completely opposite. I remember when I first started studying Dharma, it was like, oh, this is all the opposite of what I do, you know. And I said that to Geshe-la Geshe Tashi Nyamo. I said, Buddhism is the opposite. And he said, yeah. Well, the Buddha's enlightened and you're not. What do you expect, you know? Have a nice day.
A man of few words, he was.
Yeah, well, what else do you need to say? Okay, so would somebody else like to continue reading for us?
In the past, we have failed to escape from worldly existence and have had to experience a variety of sufferings. The reason is that we have neglected the well-being of sentient beings, who have been our kind parents and have cherished only ourselves, busily working for our own benefits. Since beginningless time, having held as I and self that which is not I and self, one has cherished and cared for oneself. Also, to protect oneself, one has harmed others, thus accumulating non-virtues. Hence, one has had to experience various sufferings.
Thank you. Okay, so what is this I and self that is not I and self? What are they talking about there?
There's no intrinsic self. There's no self from its own side.
Okay. So what, sorry?
Emptiness.
Yeah. What do we hold as I? What are they referring to specifically that we hold as I or me or mine?
Five aggregates.
The five aggregates, yeah, we talked about that, didn't we? Mm-hmm. What are they?
Form.
Feeling.
Consciousness.
Perception. What's the fourth one?
Memory.
Yeah, the fourth one has a lot of different translations.
Samskara is the classic.
Yeah, but in English, so memory are concepts or mental processes, yeah. It's like all the stuff we do in our mind, yeah. And what's the fifth one?
Consciousness.
Consciousness. So those are the five aggregates. And when they appear together, what do they appear to create?
A sense of self.
Yeah, our sense of self, or I, me, mine. So that's the mistake we made, basically, is we confuse all those coming together as I. And then out of that comes all of our problems. Like it says here, we defend ourselves, we protect ourselves when we're harmed, we protect our I, and then we do non-virtue. So all kinds of trouble comes out of that. And that's our basic problem.
Hence, one has had to experience various sufferings, as it was said in Shantideva. O mind, you who desire to act for the sake of your own self have passed countless eons, and yet, with even such great hardship as that, you have achieved only suffering. Having viewed this self-cherishing notion as an enemy, one should train the conduct of the three doors of the body, voice, and mind in whatever methods that work for the benefit of others. Practice of this is threefold. One, to meditate on equality between self and others. Two, to meditate on exchanging self for others. And three, to train in the conduct of these two.
Okay, so now we're getting into the specifics of this sort of subsection of this analytical meditation that's been sketched out for us here. There's, again, there are three steps to this. The equality of self and others, exchanging self for others, and then the conduct of these two. So we're going to go into detail now about how to do that. Somebody else want to continue reading? Go ahead. Nicole?
Number one, right? Yeah. Equality between self and others. Those who cannot meditate on exchanging self for others in the beginning should first train the mind in the practice of equality. Having become used to the meditation of equality through skillful means, one gradually leads this practice into exchanging self for others.
Okay, excuse me. So I just want to point out this word gradually, because we're going to hear this over and over and over here. This is a very gradual process that we're being led through here. It's not instant coffee. It doesn't happen immediately. This is something that we need to practice again and again, and it's a gradual process because we're making a radical change here in our perception about ourselves and others. So this is going to take some time and some work because we've had countless eons of having this other bad habit. So I just point this out because it's really important to understand that this takes time and practice.
It was said in the letter,
Shantideva.
Shantideva,
thank you. In the beginning, one should diligently meditate on the sameness of oneself and the other. One should protect others as one does oneself, since both are equal in wanting happiness and in not wanting pain. Furthermore, the meaning of the equality of oneself and other is the thought, just as I desire happiness, so other sentient beings desire only happiness. Therefore, I will help them to obtain happiness. As I desire not to undergo suffering, so other sentient beings do not desire suffering. Therefore, I will help them to dispel their suffering.
Okay, so this gives us the definition of what we're talking about when we talk about the equality of self and others. Just as I desire happiness, everybody else does, and just as I don't want to suffer, nobody else does. So that's the meaning of it.
As it was said in Shantideva, when both myself and others are alike in wanting happiness, what is so special about me? Why do I strive for my happiness alone? When both myself and others are alike in disliking suffering, what is so special about me? Why do I protect myself and not others? One may think, it is not appropriate for me to protect them, since it is appropriate that the suffering of other sentient beings be cared for by they themselves. If this were so, it would be inappropriate for one's hand to remove a splinter in one's foot, because other than that which experiences the suffering, it would be inappropriate for the foot to be cared for by another. As it was stated in Shantideva, if it is thought, whatever pain may arise in whomever should be cared for by the sufferer himself, then since the foot's pain is not of the hand, why should it be cared for by the hand? One may think that the two cases are not similar because the foot belongs to oneself, while sentient beings are different from oneself. This is not correct. Being under the power of habituation that grasps the foot, which originated from the semen and blood of a father and mother, as my foot, so it merely appears to exist in that way. For this reason, if one holds sentient beings also as my sentient beings, then through the power of habituation, they will become to appear in that way. As it was said in the Shantideva, therefore, in this way, just as you practice self-clinging towards the body arising from the drops of blood and semen of others, so should you try to habituate the body of others as I. Further, it was stated in the same text, just as through habituation, the notion of an I has arisen towards this selfless body, so through habituation, why shouldn't the notion of an I towards other living beings also arise?
So did you see how many times habituation was in that last section, which is another way of saying gradually? That this is a process that we've spent eons developing incorrectly, and it's going to take time to unravel it. So the habituation is something that we need to be patient with.
In brief, if both oneself and other sentient beings are alike in desiring happiness and are also alike in not desiring suffering, one should abandon all vile conduct which obstructs their attainment of desired objects and which helps them in attaining undesired objects like unhappiness. Then one should produce the pure aspiration to dispel the suffering of other sentient beings and should be diligent in the methods that accomplish their happiness. As it was said in the Shantideva, others' pain should be removed by me because it is pain, like my own pain. I should benefit others also because they are living beings, like my own body is a living being.
That is a pretty radical statement if you really think about that. Pain should be removed by me because it is pain. I think this is one of the things when we go through listening, contemplation, and meditation. I think this is in the meditation category. That really needs to sink in deeply because it's not the way we usually think. We usually look out for number one, don't we?
Mm-hmm. Continue. One may think, although I promise to dispel the suffering and to accomplish the happiness of sentient beings, I am unable to accomplish such a task. Though the beginner is unable to actually do this, one should not part from such thoughts, which are expressed from the bottom of one's heart. In accordance with the actual practice, one should work for the well-being of others as much as one can, in pace with one's own capabilities. Gradually, one will be able to work for the sake of other beings in a greater way.
And how do we know that? How do we know that we'll be able to do this if we work at it?
Well, the Buddha does that, right? Like.
Yeah, but I'm not the Buddha.
Through your own experience.
I don't have the experience of being able to take
away.
You've overlooked the experiences that you do have.
I'm sorry?
I said you've overlooked the experiences that you do have.
Of taking away the suffering of all sentient beings?
No, of gradually habituating yourself to different behaviors.
Yeah, but it's such a big task. How could I possibly do that?
Well, like I said, look at your own life. Look at the lives of others around you.
If I look at my own life, I don't feel like I'm able to.
Look at people who
do it.
Are made faint by the sight of blood.
Uh-huh.
And through habituation, they become warriors.
Oh.
You have that example. Anybody who sees a horse for the first time is awestruck. After a while, the person becomes the very same as the horse.
Well,
you're inseparable. Yeah. So you do gradually attain skills and insights and powers gradually through habituation to a process.
Mm-hmm.
But there are different levels of helping people out and relieving other people's pain.
Mm-hmm.
Even ordinary beings do it on some level, can do it on some level, and there are examples of that. Lots of it in the world. We wouldn't have made it this far if people weren't helping each other. So.
Yeah.
So there's examples right there.
But what is the guarantee? What is the ironclad, gold-tinged guarantee that we all have? In
your teacher,
your Buddha nature.
Buddha nature, Buddha nature. We all have Buddha nature, and that's the guarantee. The ability is already in us. We already have it. It's just covered up with dirt.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so the Buddha nature is when you get into these situations of oh, I could never do that, or that's beyond me, or it's too much work, or all that. That's why Buddha nature understanding is so important, because we have it in us. It's our true nature. All this other stuff is gunk. Yeah.
But how do you know, come to know that?
What?
That it's your Buddha, that you are in fact a Buddha.
Because I have faith in the teachers. Yeah.
Have faith in the Buddha's teaching.
Yeah. That's why faith...
Otherwise, what's
that's why faith was one of our pillars. Remember in the very beginning of the text, we had two pillars, faith and
refuge.
Faith is one of the pillars. You need to have the faith, and there's a whole section that we went through about faith and how to build it and how to protect it. Faith in the teachers. The Buddha doesn't lie, and in my experience, the teachers don't lie. Yeah, so faith.
Well, it's also been demonstrated through the histories of their lives.
Yeah. Okay.
As the Master Nagarjuna said.
Where?
As the Master Nagarjuna said, 142.
Okay. Does somebody else want to continue reading? Thank you, Nicole.
Sure.
Okay.
As the Master Nagarjuna said, though one has no power to work for the benefit of others, one should always have the thought of it. Whoever has that thought will naturally enter into activities that benefit others. To reflect on the meaning of this, having first taken refuge and prayed, think, for the sake of mother sentient beings who are equal to the bounds of space, I must achieve the precious state of complete Buddhahood. For that purpose, I will practice the profound path. Otherwise, while keeping in mind its meaning, one should recite the following three times. To liberate mother living beings from the world of existence, I must attain perfect enlightenment. For that purpose, I will practice profound yoga, the path of all the Buddhas. One should think, alas, even though I wish and would be glad to gain the unsurpassable enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings, as long as I'm not able to destroy self-grasping and to convert all the activities of the three doors into benefits for sentient beings, for that long, I am bound not to gain Buddhahood. Therefore, from now on, I will abandon grasping upon self-cherishing, which is the root of all faults. This is the excellent method to convert all activities into the benefit of all sentient beings, and this is the only path traversed by the conqueror's son, the Bodhisattvas. So I must rely and reside upon such a path as this. Furthermore, for a long time, one should think, just as I desire happiness, so do all sentient beings without exception desire that very happiness. Therefore, starting from today, I will assist all sentient beings to achieve happiness along its cause. Just as I do not desire to have suffering, so do all sentient beings without exception not desire to have that very suffering. Therefore, starting from today, I will assist all sentient beings to dispel suffering along with its cause. Then, with an uncontrived mind, think, I wish and would be glad were this to happen.
Okay, so we have this aspiration. We have the equality of self and others, which is the first step. And now we're going to go to the second step, which is exchanging self for others.
So two, exchanging self for others. One who desires to quickly gain Buddhahood should diligently meditate upon the enlightenment thought, which exchanges self for others. As it was said by Shantideva, one who desires to quickly rescue oneself and others should perform this most excellent secret practice, the act of exchanging oneself for others.
Excuse me. These practices were secret for a while because this is a very counterintuitive thing to do. Now it's not secret anymore, but it still is this practice that we need to habituate to.
One may ask, wouldn't one attain enlightenment by only relying upon the thought of the sameness of self and other? This is not so. As it was said by Shantideva, if one doesn't perfectly exchange one's happiness with the suffering of another, one will not be able to gain Buddhahood, and even in the world, one will not have happiness. The reason for this is that all sentient beings have been one's kind mother since beginningless time, and so were very kind in the past. Even now, since the attainment of unsurpassable enlightenment depends upon sentient beings, they are very kind to one in various ways. Therefore, one should have the desire and be glad to take upon oneself the suffering and the cause of suffering of sentient beings and give one's happiness and virtues to other sentient beings.
Excuse me. So what does this mean where it says the attainment of unsurpassable enlightenment depends on sentient beings? I thought it depended upon ourselves. What we do.
But we live in relation to others, so it's our behavior, our thoughts, speech, and thoughts towards others that either harm or help.
Okay. So, yeah, so all we're going to go into this in more detail when we get into the perfections, but each of the six perfections is dependent upon the interaction with sentient beings. So it's even people that are harming us.
Hey, even insects.
So this is not something that exists or that we do just, you know, in a vacuum on our own. It's always in relationship. That's why this exchanging self for others part of it is so important.
Right, because we're interdependent. If one backslides from such activities and thoughts through desiring one's own happiness and placing others in suffering, then one will not be able to be liberated from the cycle of existence, let alone attain Buddhahood, and will experience only suffering. As it was said by Shantideva, desiring one's exaltation, one will obtain evil states, loneliness, and foolishness. Transferring that very desire to others, one will obtain the honor of the states of happiness. If one uses others for the sake of oneself, one will experience servanthood and the like. If one uses oneself for the sake of others, one will experience mastership and the like. If one does not soon destroy this giant attachment to self-cherishing by intense mindfulness, then one will not be able to accomplish the activities of this life, let alone the states of personal liberation and omniscience. With whomever one may live, whether it be teachers, friends, or relatives, there will be disagreement on the arrangement of seats and food. Not being able to bear even the forms of language used, one will pass the time only in argument. Throughout one's whole life, one will be unable to accomplish one's desire. Moreover, within the condition of having undesirable things fall upon oneself, one will suffer by oneself alone. Others will not even come to console one. In brief, all faults arise from the grasping of self-cherishing. Therefore, having looked upon it as an enemy, they blame all the faults of other beings upon it, and then subdue this giant of self-grasping. Since all happiness and benefit arise by relying upon sentient beings, therefore one should look upon them as one's relatives. If one has the intention of dedicating all of one's virtues and happiness to one's parent sentient beings, then whatever virtue one accumulates through activities, such as guarding one's moral conduct, study, contemplation, and meditation, will become the causes for gaining perfect enlightenment.
Excuse me. So if we do this, if we dedicate all of our virtues, which is another word for merit, and our happiness to others, isn't that, we'll give away all our merit, we won't have any merit. And we need merit. So why would we want to do this?
Don't you gain more by giving it away?
Exactly, yes. Exactly. You gain more by giving it away.
No matter how learned, earnest, and noble one may consider oneself to be, and even though one diligently performs virtuous actions, if one's practice fails to counteract self-grasping, one will not transcend this world. Therefore, it's very important for the religious practitioner to know this vital practice.
That's one to underline and put a star by. There's like three or four sentences in this text that sum it up, and this is one of them, I think.
One might think, if I take the suffering of others upon myself, I will not be able to carry the heavy load of their suffering, so I cannot practice this meditation of exchanging self for others. But it is not like this, because through the power of the beneficial thought that meditates in this way, the varied types of sufferings of others will be allayed. Those suffering will not ripen upon oneself, and not only will they not ripen upon oneself, but through the power of habituation of meditating in that manner, the notion of grasping at self-cherishing will be reversed. When it is certain to bring benefit to others, there will arise the ability to train by stages in the ocean-like conducts of the bodhisattvas, such as unhesitatingly giving up one's head or limbs. Through relying upon such practices, one will obtain perfect Buddhahood.
Thank you. So this is one of the thoughts that can arise when we are first exposed to this idea of taking on other people's suffering. It's like, well, wait a minute, I have enough suffering on my own. I don't want anybody else's, you know. And besides, that's just, doesn't sound like a very good idea. Sakyapandita goes into some detail about this, just saying, no, don't think that way. Don't worry about, oh, if I desire to take on other people's suffering, that it's actually going to come and I'm actually going to suffer. That's not the way it works. He said that the example he gives is, that would be like going into the forest and clapping your hands and screaming and banging a drum and making a lot of noise and expecting to attract wild animals to you. That's not the way it works. They run away. And this is similar to that, that even though it's sounds odd to think about, well, I really want everybody's suffering to come to me and I'm going to give away all my happiness. It's the thought that changes your attitude of self-cherishing. It's not that all the world's suffering is going to land on your head. So that's something we should not worry about. It's a training.
Yeah, and also what's really happening is you're wishing them happiness
mm-hmm.
when you want to take their suffering away.
Okay. You want to read some more or do you want somebody else?
No, I'm okay.
Okay.
As it was said by Shantideva, therefore one should definitely enter wholeheartedly into working for the benefit of others, and that the words of the sage are undeceived. One will later see the virtues of doing so. Therefore, since the words of the perfectly and completely enlightened Buddha are not endowed with falsehood, one will accomplish one's purpose through that very practice of benefiting others. Therefore, one should think, I am late in meditating upon this enlightenment thought, which exchanges self for others. If I had meditated on this from the very beginning, by now I would already be enlightened and would be enjoying only happiness and not the arising of such suffering which is now troubling me. So one should endeavor to meditate on the exchanging of self for others.
Thank you. So this is slightly misleading in the way it's worded, because it says, well, if I had done this from the very beginning. But actually in Buddhist thought there is no beginning. It's the mind is beginningless. So what it's really saying is that I've just always had this habit of self-cherishing. If I had switched over to this way of thinking and acting a long time ago, I'd be, you know, enlightened by now. It's like Geshe used to say, the Buddha was 2,600 years ago, how come you're not enlightened? You know, we've just been doing this habitual, cyclic existence of self-cherishing, and it's got us nowhere, basically. So this is an opportunity to switch it, to change it up, so to speak.
As it was said by Shantideva, if you had done this at an earlier time, the perfection of Buddhahood would be yours, and the present unhappy condition, such as this, would not be possible. At this time, one should explain whatever stories one knows of the previous lives of the Buddha Shakyamuni, such as when he was a cart puller in hell, or other stories of...
Yeah, that's the Sutra of the Wise and the Foolish.
So one should gain unshakable faith.
Okay, so this story about the cart puller, does anybody know that and want to say it, want to tell it?
That's the story where he's... roped together with another being, right? And they're pulling a cart, and the overseer is lashing at his partner. And he says, please.
But where are they, though?
Hit me. They're in hell.
In hell.
Hit me.
Yeah.
And so the overseer hits the Buddha over and over again and kills him.
And what happened to the Buddha?
And he is reborn in heaven.
Yeah, immediately. He shot immediately to the heaven realms. Like that thought alone, may I take on the suffering of my companion. Instantly he was shot to the heavenly realm.
Yes.
That's how powerful it is. It can take you out of hell from the lowest to the highest realm. It's still in samsara, but it's a lot better place to be. There's other stories too. These stories are collected in, they're called the Jataka Tales. Some people say Jataka tales, I'm not sure, but anyway, Jataka tales. There's a whole collection of these stories which are the Buddha's previous lifetimes, which is important to remember that the Buddha wasn't always the Buddha. He was a regular guy like anybody else. In fact, he ended up in the hell realm. But how do you get out? Well, that's what this is about.
The manner to practice this, as it was said by Shantideva. Therefore, in order to allay one's own pain and to allay the sufferings of others, one's own self should be given to others, and others should be regarded as oneself. In the beginning, having directed one's meditation to one's mother of this life, one should think, this is my mother. This, my mother, has dispelled many harms and accomplished much benefit for me. Therefore, I should also prevent any harm to her and accomplish her benefit. What is it that harms this mother of mine? She is being directly harmed by suffering and indirectly by the cause of suffering. Therefore, I will take upon myself these two, i.e. suffering and the cause of suffering. One should imagine that both the suffering and its causes are transferred to oneself and be joyful that it should happen so. Think that through this, the root of grasping, self-cherishing, is extracted.
Okay, so why do you think it says the suffering and the cause of suffering? What's the difference?
Because there's always a cause.
And well, why don't they just
is
say...
the effect.
Sorry?
The suffering is the effect.
Uh-huh.
And then there's the cause that causes.
But why doesn't it just say, well, I want to take away my mother's suffering?
Well, because mother has habituated certain patterns of her own behavior. And if you don't address those patterns,
yeah,
you won't be able to address them.
Yeah, she'll just keep causing suffering on top of suffering, yeah.
I was just going to say, it's like the plant, right? If you don't remove the roots, like the cause of the suffering, then it's still going to grow.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Do you want to keep reading, or do you want to pass it on?
I'm okay.
Okay.
Someone's got a burning desire now. Where did I... Oh, there we are. Then one should think, what would be the benefit to my mother? She can be directly benefited by happiness, and in the long run, by virtue. I will give her these two. Having transferred all of one's happiness and virtue to one's mother without any regard for one's own desires, One should think the body and mind of one's mother is presently comforted, and that indirectly she becomes endowed with virtue, the cause of happiness. One should be joyful should it happen in this way. Likewise, one should meditate by applying the same procedure to others as one has to one's mother.
Okay, so by now we've had a pattern of this meditative practice established where we start with our mother, and then where do we go?
Father,
and then?
Neighbors.
Huh?
Neighbors?
Yeah, relatives, and then?
Friends.
Enemies.
Friends, neighbors, and then enemies.
Yeah.
And then all sentient beings. So we go. So what they're saying here is what they just went through with your mother, you should apply that to all those other steps too. It just wasn't written here.
The manner to contemplate on the meaning of this is as follows. First of all, one should clearly visualize one's mother of this life and think, "Alas, this is my beloved and dear mother, who gave me this special body through which enlightenment can be achieved, who protected me from various harms and fears, and who accomplished unimaginable benefit and happiness for me. Therefore, she is very kind. Not only in this life, but since beginningless time, she has been my mother and has shown immeasurable care. She worked in that way again and again for me, yet she herself is still roaming in this world. This is pitiful. From this time on, I will strive to attain the stage of perfect, omniscient Buddhahood for the sake of this mother. The reason I have failed to gain Buddhahood until now is that I have neglected my kind mother and have maintained self-cherishing only. Now, in this short life, I will subdue this giant grasping of self-cherishing and will abandon being its assistant and servant. I will try my best to repay my mother's kindness by practicing the Dharma. What is harming my mother? She is being harmed by suffering and the causes of suffering. So I will take the sufferings and the cause of sufferings of my mother upon myself. One should say, may all of my kind mother's sufferings and non-virtues, the cause of suffering, ripen upon me. Meditate that both her suffering and its cause fall in the form of a black lump into the center of one's heart, just as a hide will fall, having been skinned. For a long time, one should think, I wish and would be happy were this to happen. By that meditation, one should think that the giant of grasping, of the cherishing of one's mind stream, which is without any basis, is extracted at its root, like the awakening from the misconception that a colored rope to be a snake. Again, one should think, what would be the benefit to my mother? Were she endowed with happiness and the cause of happiness, she would be benefited. Therefore, I will give her all my happiness and the virtues, the cause of happiness. Then, one should say, may all my happiness and virtues, the cause of happiness, ripen upon my mother. Meditate that from one's heart, one's happiness and virtues issue forth like the rays of a rising sun and fall upon one's mother. Through experiencing it, she presently becomes blissful. Having assembled all the favorable conditions to practice Dharma and having increased her virtue, she gains the potential to achieve Buddhahood. For a long time, one should think, I wish and would be happy were this to happen.
Thank you. So, if you want to, you can actually visualize your mother while you're doing this meditation. And you can actually visualize, as it's described here, this black lump and the light going back. And you might even find yourself being emotional about it. We talked about this before, that these meditations, it's okay if they bring up feelings. You know, you don't have to be stone cold, you know, feelingless robot. You can actually feel the feeling of this interchange with your mother, you know, whether she's alive or not is irrelevant. It doesn't matter. Or if you've substituted somebody else in there because you had some problems with your mother or something. But this actual meditation could be something that you can involve your whole being in, is what I'm trying to say.
If through meditating upon these two, giving one's happiness and taking her suffering from the depths of one's heart in this way, one's visualization becomes slightly clear, then one should pray, may the suffering of all mother sent beings ripen upon myself. By my virtues, may these mothers gain happiness. At the time of reciting the first and second parts of this prayer, respectively, one should meditate with an intense and uninterrupted visualization. Finally, one should think from the bottom of one's heart, "May this mother of mine be endowed with happiness and the cause of happiness. May she be free from suffering and the cause of suffering. And may she gain Buddhahood quickly." Likewise, one should think, "My father, relatives, enemies, and all the other sentient beings, each in their own category, who are the subject of my visualization, are each suffering against their wishes. These desperate beings who are in such a condition are pitiful. Therefore think, from now on I will strive to gain the stage of perfect omniscient Buddhahood for the sake of these beings. Thus apply the same procedure as explained above, and then meditate upon the visualization of giving and taking as before."
Okay, thank you. So where it says all the other sentient beings, each in their own category, what do you think that refers to?
The different realms?
Yeah, the realms, yeah. How many are there?
Six.
Yeah. Sakya Pandita says there's seven. He says that spirits are the seventh, but generally it's six. Okay.
Let's are the six ones in samsara, like in the form we recognize?
Yeah.
Right.
The hell realms, the hungry ghosts. We went through those earlier on, the six realms.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's pass the ball to somebody else. Somebody else want to read? Okay.
"Finally, for a long time, one should think, although sentient beings, the object of this exchange meditation of self for other, oneself, the exchanger, and that which is to be exchanged, that is, bliss, suffering, and self-cherishing, are not existent whatsoever within the essence of the ultimate truth. Still, by the power of the deluded mind within the relative truth, one has to experience all these non-existent visions. This is pitiful. Then pray, for the sake of these beings, may I quickly attain the state of perfect omniscient Buddhahood. Then one should dedicate one's virtues."
Why do we dedicate virtue?
Gain merit.
Yes. What else?
Well, we dedicate it for the sake of sentient beings.
Okay. And
It's to cut our self-cherishing.
Yes, all these are true. What happens if we don't dedicate it? And then we go out and somebody cuts us off in traffic and we get angry.
You lose all our merit.
You lose the merit. It destroys it. So the dedication seals it, so to speak. It's like save with word in your computer. Yeah, did you ever do something and not save it?
That's why they have autosave.
That's why they have autosave, right? Well, dedication is autosave.
"In all of one's activities, one should be mindful of the enlightenment thought that cherishes other beings more than oneself, and with one's voice one should recite, 'May all the suffering of sentient beings ripen upon me. By my virtues may all of them obtain happiness.' One should be diligent in the methods that employ the activities of the three doors of body, voice, and mind to benefit sentient beings in any form. If the grasping of self-cherishing arises in one's mind, then by remembering the meaning of the following saying in the
Shantideva,
one will not be overpowered by the grasping at self-cherishing. By this self-cherishing, you were harmed hundreds of times in this world. Now, by remembering this enmity towards self-loving, you should destroy this self-serving mind."
What is enmity? What does that mean?
Vow?
No.
It's a negative feeling.
Yeah, it's aversion.
Yeah. Dislike.
Right. "If there arises a temporary illness to one's body or severe intolerable suffering in one's mind, then to bring it into the path of practice, one should think thus. In this world, there are certainly many tormented by diseases or by severe suffering like me. This is pitiful because all of them are harmed by diseases or by severe suffering against their wishes. May all the sufferings of these sentient beings be ripened upon me. Thus pray and meditate through applying the same principle explained before. Likewise, one should pity the hell beings who are tormented by the unbearable sufferings of cold and heat against their wishes. One should pray, may all the sufferings of heat and cold of these beings be ripened upon me. Thus meditate through applying the procedure explained above. Likewise, one should apply this practice to each of the six realms of existence. Visualize going to and taking from each of them and meditate with a very attentive mind. Further, one should think, if such physical illness or mental suffering did not occur to me, I would be distracted only by the busy activities of this life. Having become intoxicated with pride and arrogance, I would never produce sadness for this world and would never be mindful of the acceptance and rejection of virtue and non-virtue. So this disease or suffering has caused me to be mindful of the objects of refuge and the Dharma. It has evoked within me a strong renunciation and sadness for this world and many deeds, karma, that would have caused me to experience the hells in future lives are being settled through ripening here in this life. If one practices in this manner, one's illness and suffering will be transformed into the path of enlightenment. As was said by Shantideva, moreover, the good qualities of suffering are that one dispels pride by sadness, generates compassion for worldlings, produces an aversion for non-virtue, and a fondness for virtue.
Yeah, so I think that's worth just making note that there are these four qualities of suffering. I mean, we all suffer, but sometimes we have really intense suffering. Yeah, and if we can remember these four qualities, it's called taking suffering onto the path. We can flip it. Instead of going, oh, poor me, I'm suffering, we can actually turn that into our practice. And since we suffer anyway, there's plenty of opportunities to do that.
If one is harmed by an evil spirit, then one should meditate upon the thoughts. This evil spirit has acted as my mother for many lives, during which she provided benefits and protected me from harm. Even right now, when my body, voice, and mind are distracted to the wrong path, and I forget to apply myself to virtue, this evil spirit is assisting me by encouraging these three doors of body, voice, and mind to practice virtue. So this evil spirit is really very kind. However, not understanding it in this way, I regard him as a harm doer. This is not good. Now I must repay his kindness by practicing the holy Dharma. What would be of benefit to him? He would be benefited were he endowed with happiness and the cause of happiness, and were he free from suffering and the cause of suffering. Therefore, may the suffering and the cause of suffering of this evil spirit ripen upon me. By practicing in this manner, the evil spirit himself becomes an assistant in one's gaining enlightenment.
Thank you. Just again, Sakyapandita classifies spirit realm as the seventh realm. And we haven't really talked about this much, but how do you think somebody ends up as an evil spirit?
I don't know.
Maybe they get stuck in the bardo?
No, it's not being stuck in the bardo. Bardo is sort of doesn't fit in any of the realm classifications. Mm-hmm. What kind of karma or action do you think would be done to produce that kind of result of being born as an evil spirit?
Malevolence, someone who creates schisms, someone who takes a knife, someone who has grievance and festers the grievance until finally they turn into the grievance.
Okay. What's the fundamental thing that's lacking in a person's action in order to produce a rebirth as a spirit, an evil spirit? You could be a very high meditator, you know, like a really high practitioner, you know, extremely skillful in meditation, but if you're not skillful enough, if you lack one thing...
Compassion.
Compassion, yeah, bodhicitta. If you don't have that, if you don't have heart, in other words, if you're all just, you know, if you lack heart, if you lack that, that's the karmic cause. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And there are instances where people were actually very, very high, you know, high with parentheses, practitioners, in terms of their technical skill and meditation and so on and so forth, but they didn't have the heart part. You can end up being an evil spirit.
So what we term a psychopath, possibly?
A psychopath?
They're often termed as not having any compassion or empathy for others.
That's not a topic that I feel qualified to comment on, so I don't know. Anyway, that's kind of an aside. But, you know, there's a lot of people that don't even believe in evil spirits, too. That's another thing. Mm-hmm. But, anyway, that's another topic.
Can I pass to...
You're going to pass? Who wants to read?
Me.
Okay.
Here. If there arises an unbearable thought of the harm caused by others, such as that of one's enemy and the like, then one should think in the manner described previously for meditating upon loving kindness and compassion. Quote, "This harmer has been my mother for many lives, has cared for me with kindness, and even now is helping me to destroy my pride and arrogance. So she's very kind." Unquote. With the thought of desiring to repay her kindness, meditate on giving and taking. Otherwise, one should think, quote, "Both of these, the enemy and the ghost, were my mothers for many lives. Though they benefited me, protected me from harm, and were very kind, at this time, due to the power of a deluded mind, they are harming me. This is pitiful." Unquote. Then meditate on giving to and taking from them. If one practices in this manner, then the bad conditions themselves will be transformed into the path to enlightenment. As it was said in Shantideva, "Therefore, my foe is like a treasure appearing in my house without it being earned by my efforts. Since he is a helper in the conduct of a bodhisattva, I ought to be pleased with this foe also."
Hmm. Yeah, that's a pretty radical thought, isn't it? My foe is a treasure.
It's terrific. Great teacher.
Sorry?
A great teacher.
Well, yeah, it's good work if you can get it. Geshe-la used to say that if you really high advanced practitioners, they find somebody really irritating and really, they actually give them gifts so that they hang around more, so they can practice more meditation or more patience. Okay, so that's the end of the second section. So now we're going to the third section of the conduct.
Mm-hmm. Number three. Training in the conduct of equality and exchanging, this has three parts. A, training in the general conduct of bodhisattvas. B, training in the six perfections in order to ripen oneself. And C, training in the four practices of gathering in order to ripen others. A, training in the general conduct of the bodhisattvas, as it was stated in Shantideva, "In order to accomplish the purpose of other sentient beings, I give away my body, my wealth, and even all my virtues of the three times without any regret. By giving up all, one will transcend sorrow and one's mind will accomplish nirvana. Since one must abandon all at the time of death, it would be best to give it to all sentient beings now."
Thank you. So what does this mean when it says, "I give away my body"?
Well, if necessary, you lay down your life for another.
Okay.
Maybe not be so attached to your body while you're living in it.
Exactly.
Okay. There's lots of stories in the Jataka tales about the Buddha in his previous lives. Various examples of him giving his body away. There's an example where he sees a lioness who's very weak and hungry, and she has all these
cubs
that she can't nurse. And so it's a long story, but basically what he does is he gives his blood for her to drink, and then he gives his body for her to eat. But it's important to understand that that's not what we're supposed to do. That's for very, 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 very advanced bodhisattvas up on the bhumis who have, you know, spiritual attainments. Beginners like us, we don't do stuff like that. But we do have the thought of non-attachment to our body. If the situation arises, you know, that we have the mental capacity to think that way, that we're training our mind here. These are mind trainings, remember. But that doesn't mean that you run out and cut off your fingers or your arms or something. Like, there's stories of, you know, these kind of extreme examples. That's for later. That's not for us yet. You doubt?
Well, I was just thinking about an example that my grandfather gave.
Uh-huh.
This was from the First World War. And one of the tasks to bring boys back to the medical tent was to go out in the cart with the horses and bring them back. And so it was that there was no one to bring them back. My grandfather was a small man, not much bigger than I. And so he went out with the cart and the horses, and he found five boys still alive, and he put them into the cart, and he managed to get them back through a bombardment. And he said that during that bombardment, he knew that there was a great bubble around them, and the horses knew it, and the boys knew it, and they got through. He was the only one to go because the other person was the surgeon. And so there was no one else. My grandfather went. I think that is sort of what we're talking about, is that when circumstances, and they will always come up in one life or another, are extreme, you do, just as you are now, not a realized Buddha, certainly not, but you're one person who could make a difference to maybe five boys, and you do it.
Mm-hmm.
What you're saying is you can help no matter what.
No matter what, realized or unrealized you are, you can help. Anyone can help, and maybe that is the shift that takes us from one level to another. Maybe that's the shift, is just your own sacrifice in the face of certain disaster.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so you want to continue?
As in the manner, I believe, you're right here.
Oh, yes, right. As in the manner of this saying, one should produce the thought of the desire to give all of one's body, wealth, and virtues accumulated during the three times to all one's parent sentient beings. Then one should think, quote, through the virtues of such an action of giving, may all sentient beings, according to their individual wishes, obtain inexhaustible wealth right in front of themselves, unquote. Within the limits of one's actual capabilities, one should help all sentient beings to dispel sufferings and to accomplish happiness. Further, one should benefit them with whatever one possesses. For this, one should first of all train in giving only insignificant articles, and then gradually one should give dearer and dearer articles. By acting in such a manner, through the power of habituation, one will later be able to give up one's son, wife, and even one's own body and life. As it was said in Shantideva, at the start, our guide enjoins the giving of vegetables and the like. Later, having become accustomed to that, one gradually becomes able to give away even one's own flesh. When the realization arises that one's own body is similar to those vegetables and the like, then, at that time, what hardship would there be in giving up one's flesh, and so on?
Thank you. So, again, this is emphasizing gradually this is happening. This is going to happen gradually. And in the, I think it's in Shantideva, maybe it's some of the other teachings, they talk about some people really have a lot of trouble giving. You know, they're just very sort of tight. you know. And so those people are advised to just have a pocket full of stones and then just take the stone and put it in your other pocket, which sounds kind of silly, but it's an easy thing to do, you know. And you just get in the habit of giving. And then here it talks about giving vegetables. There's the example of you give a cup of cooked vegetables, something that it's not difficult to give somebody. And you practice with these very easy practices until you just sort of break the mold that you're in of stinginess and gradually develop generosity and giving until the point where you have no attachment to your body or your relatives or your possessions or anything at all, which is where, of course, the Buddhas are. So the process is gradual. This is the gradual path that we're talking about here. So that's the general conduct of the Bodhisattvas. I think I'd like to pause here because the next section is the six perfections, which is a very important section, very fundamental part of what we're talking about here, and there is some detail. So I think this would be a good place to stop for this evening. Does anybody have any comments they want to make at this point before we do our dedication?
Well, I think even the giving can be something even as simple as smiling at a stranger in the street and you brighten their day with that. I mean, it's really simple stuff, like getting over the fear of doing that with somebody or someone who lives on the street and looks scary to you, is to just, you know, smile at them and say hi. I mean, just basic simple stuff like that.
Yeah.
Can also be practiced and built upon.
Yeah. Or if that's too scary, just have the thought.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
I wish you well.
That could be and I wish you well. That could be me and I wish you well.
Yeah. Any other comments?
There's a lot of fear in our societies and, you know, people are just afraid to do that and it's such a simple thing.
Yeah. Any other comments? Questions? Complaints? Okay. So let's do our dedication. Let's save with name. So nam dehi panche zi pani tom nilani nani nam panche te ke ga na chi va lung tu pe si pe so le do a du var shu jang chub sem chubim bo che ma ke pa nam ke gyur chi ke ma nyam pa me par yam gong ne gong tu pel pa shu jam pa pa wo ji tar kim pa dong kun tu sang po de yang de shin te De da kung gi je su da lo chi Ge wa di da tam che ra tu no Tu sung che ki gya wa tam che ki Nu wa gang ma cho tu na pa gi Da jing ge wa sa wa di kung yam Song po shu ru ra tu nyo wa ji Shak sa wa dang chu jing sha pa dang Ye su yi rung zu jing so wa ni Ye wa chung se dang gi chi sak pa Tang chi zo pe liang chu chi By this merit, may all attain omniscience, may defeat the enemy wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may all beings be free. Bodhicitta is precious, may it arise in all beings in whom it has not arisen, may it never decline where it has arisen, but may it ever grow and flourish. In whatever way, valiant Manjushri and Samantabhadra, know how to transfer merit,
So do I dedicate all my own virtues, that I might train to be like them.
Through this dedication, praise is supreme, by the virtuous wills of the past, present, and future, I, together with all sentient beings, dedicate these roots of virtue to attaining Buddhahood. May whatever little virtue I may have gained from prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting, and beseeching, be dedicated to attaining perfect enlightenment.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.